Do you know how dumb, loud, and bad you have to be to derail a franchise that was already dumb, loud, and bad? You have to be exactly as dumb, loud, and bad as Transformers: The Last Knight, which unfortunately was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
In America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
This is the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with Stabmaster Arson and Dead Mike. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Hi.
And Camila Adams.
Peace and blessings, my Nubian brothers and sisters.
I wish I hadn't been the one posting because there are very few GIFs. Right. For CB4,
sure.
The one that came up was his Black Power song. That's just "I'm Black, y'all" over and over again. And I was like, I don't get to post that.
I forgot about that. That was pretty funny.
That's my favorite. Oh no, my favorite joke is "Rapumentary" by A. White.
Right.
That's my favorite song in the movie for sure.
I was hoping. Like, when we got to the halfway mark in CB4 and we hadn't heard a second song by the group, I was like, let's just keep this bit rolling. Let's just establish that Straight Outta Low Cash is their only song.
Right?
That is true.
That would have made more sense.
The shocking find for me is when I was looking for stuff to post the episode, I immediately got a targeted ad for Straight Outta Low Cash face masks.
Is that one of those things where they just put any words
probably.
Or phrases on there?
Probably.
I mean,
but God bless
probably,
the internet.
But like, there must be enough of a CB4 fan base to justify this.
Yeah, I just don't know. It's just probably one of those. They just put anything on there.
Well, we thought CB4 was just fine. And let me tell you, it is like Citizen Kane had a baby with Psycho compared to Transformers: The Last Knight. There's no better way to kick this off. I'm sure we have plenty to say, but I'm going to read an entire brief AP news article from June 11th, 2017. So credit to the Associated Press. The headline: Anthony Hopkins unsure of Transformers plot. Sir Anthony Hopkins doesn't quite get Transformers: The Last Knight. The 79-year-old actor has joined the franchise as Sir Edmund Burton, yada yada yada, and though he had a terrific time making the movie, he wasn't really sure about the, quote, complicated plot. He said, "You're not going to ask me to explain the plot, are you? Because it's so very complicated, and there's the whole mythology of four previous films that come into play. I have to admit, I don't quite get all of it. All I know is I play a highly educated, eccentric English lord. I had a terrific time making it. Mark Wahlberg was wonderful to work with. The locations were excellent. I showed up, put my costume on, said my lines, and stayed out of trouble. That's all I ever do. It beats working for a living."
Oh, Sir Anthony Hopkins.
And it shows.
Yeah.
It shows that he doesn't know or care what's going on.
Oh, absolutely.
Him.
And I'm not sure. And I, watching him in this, at first, I wasn't clear if he was actually in the movie. I thought that, oh, it's just going to be a voiceover. Sure, I get that, sir. But then he shows up and I'm like, oh, and he's a major player in the film. And I don't know if it made me feel better or worse about him. Like, what? Like, oh, it's on one hand, it's like, oh, that's awesome. Like, he could just let his little sir guard down and, you know, sure, I'll go ahead and act. I'll share screen time with Mark Wahlberg in a movie about robots. And then it's also Sir Anthony is sharing screen time with Mark Wahlberg in a movie about robots. It's like, how much does your castle cost?
Or are they robots? That is my major question about the mythology. I think that we should do the 60-second recap first, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's going to help.
Robot aliens. Alien robots?
I will acknowledge right off the bat that I'm taking a slightly different approach, only in that I think I'm actually punching it up a little bit. Like, I tried to digest it, then I put it into a plot that I think was going on that is way more streamlined than what we actually got. That's the recap this week.
Oh my. Good luck.
So, say when.
Go.
Thousands of years ago, the robot alien planet Cybertron was destroyed. Some of the robots ended up on Earth, where one of them gave a super powerful weapon to the wizard Merlin. Now, in the present, it turns out that Earth itself is a transformer named Unicron. His horns start jutting out of the ground. The staff is capable of using Stonehenge to suck up all of Earth/Unicron's energy and restore Cybertron. The good guys, which includes the Transformers, Marky Mark and his friends, and the remnant of not the Knights Templar, but really just the Knights Templar, led by Anthony Hopkins, get into a fight to stop the bad guys, which includes a robot named Quintessa, the Decepticons, and the human military from destroying Earth. There is a lot of Transformer Decepticon business. Optimus Prime is a bad guy for a little while. None of that matters at all. The good guys win. The Transformers and Decepticons all leave Earth. Quintessa pops up in the credits and offers to destroy Earth again.
Oh, you got it. Yay! 59 seconds. I got nervous.
I saw you. I thought right. I saw you flash yeah. 5 seconds. And I was like, I gave you
five.
Wow.
You told me plot that I was unaware of.
Yeah, me too. First of all, the whole Earth is unicorn. That went over my head.
First of all, let's be clear. I was not sober when I watched this movie.
You know, I asked y'all if it should have been 2 or 3 fingers. Eventually, it was like 6 fingers by the time this thing was done. So
there were definitely points where I was like, I don't care.
I felt like I was on a really long bus ride. Like, there's this thing, I have to stay with it. I don't care. I'm just disengaged. Yeah.
So the whole Unicron, oh my God. I thought that Unicron arrived on the same meteor as the other Transformers and just got buried deeper.
That's
it doesn't matter.
I know, it doesn't matter. That's the beauty of it. It doesn't matter.
As far as I can figure it out, and like I only got that far by like watching for 20 minutes, saying fuck it, pausing it, and reading the entire Wikipedia plot synopsis. Reading it again, because even just getting through it once was a chore, and watching the rest of the movie. With that, I kind of got it. But yeah, my understanding is that Unicron and Cybertron, what hyperactive 6-year-old named these things?
Right.
Unicron and Cybertron are both living planet/robot things. And Unicron also happens to be our Earth.
But here's the thing I don't understand.
Why this
movie
exists?
Are they robots, or are they aliens who resemble robots?
I'm going to say, since we started in the fucking dark ages for no damn good reason, that they're aliens who resemble robots.
Because like, they can die?
And apparently like they grow up. They start off as puppies and grow up.
And then Evil Lady doesn't even really look like a robot.
No.
She's more like an entity.
Yeah.
Maybe they're incorporeal souls that get infused into robots.
Stop it. You're giving it much more credit than no.
I mean, like at the base level, they are robots which can hide themselves as cars. And why?
And trash.
And so they were here 1,500 years before the invention of cars?
Disguise themselves as horses.
Dragons, apparently. They all became a big old dragon because they needed to help Merlin I don't know what the conflict, what like insignificant Middle Ages round table skirmish was happening that the robots were like, we're going to give you a weapon that can literally destroy Earth just to use for this thing. Take care of it after. Bye. Like,
right. Yeah. That was why did
Camila's broken.
I'm done. Like, why did he have, why couldn't he just borrow the thing? Why was it like, okay, this is yours now. Go off, protect it with your life, blah, blah, blah. But something's going to come along that wants to kill you for that. Good luck. Basically, let me just put out here a blanket. I don't understand for the rest of this this entire fucking 154 minute movie, which the commercials were a welcome break. Thank God it was on FX now.
I don't know what you guys got. I got weird local furniture store commercials with very dated computer animation.
I got some of those, some drug stuff, some, you know, a lot of prescription meds. And then at some point, like I said, I was drunk and things got real interesting.
This is the only time where I was like, thank God the laundry's done so I can look at it while I fold it. Rather than continuing to look at the screen.
Oh, fucking hell.
I don't want to shame anyone except all the people who like this. Imagine being a person who chose to buy a ticket for this. You know, some people just end up going, whatever, it's what out. My friend wanted to go fine. But, like, there are people who were like, yes, right. Let's go. Who and where are you? What happened to you?
No idea.
I also am surprised how much, again, this mythology thing, even beyond the robots, the fact that that one military guy has been in all five of these movies.
Josh Duhamel or whatever?
Yes, I was going to say, I cannot remember his name, but I know
Fergie's husband,
Josh or Jake. He is in all these movies. His character seems meaningless.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, why preserve these characters unless I'm supposed to care?
I don't know. Maybe he has some dirt on Michael Bay. I don't like. Josh needs
and then
a paycheck.
The Knights Templar, they're the Order of Witwicky, right? Which is Shia LaBeouf's character's name. So it's like, I don't know if this is retconning putting Shia LaBeouf in this Order of Knights or if that happened in the previous
films that I have not seen.
Witwicky
is Shia LaBeouf's character's name?
Mm-hmm.
Witwicky. Like the whole, that's his last name, Witwicky?
Witwicky. Yep. Okay. And they show his picture when he's like, this is a great line of protectors.
Oh.
And it's
also,
like all these noble
totally
guys and then Shia LaBeouf.
I was probably flummoxed by the whole the fact that Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass were also part of the whole, we want to protect the fucking robots. I'm going to say they had other things on their mind.
We got people problems right now.
Right.
The only comfort we can take is that this movie didn't do as well as you'd think. So let's get to the Faxy segment, and then I'm sure we will have more complaints. Transformers The Last Knight was released June 23rd of 2017. It was the 15th number one of the year. It won that weekend with $44.6 million. That is less than you would think. I'll come back to it. There were no other new wide releases that weekend. But there were big money makers in the next two spots. The fourth weekend of Wonder Woman was second. The second weekend of Cars 3 was in third. So there was substantial competition. It took a big dive in its second weekend. Its second weekend was only $16.8 million. It fell to third place behind Despicable Me 3, debuted with $72.5 million. And surprisingly, Baby Driver debuted ahead of the second weekend of Transformers with $20.5 million. The Last Knight only spent four weekends in the top 10, $130.1 million total, 25th for the year. It made less than Wonder. Remember Wonder, where Jacob Tremblay had a deformed
facial difference.
Face?
Yep.
Huh?
That made more money than Transformers The Last Knight. We're still talking about big numbers, $130 million, but this is a nosedive for the franchise. This is the fifth one. The original was 2007, made $319 million. Revenge of the Fallen in 2009 made a little over $402 million. That's the highest grossing. Dark of the Moon was in 2011. It made $352 million. They took a little break. Franchise came back with Mark Wahlberg in 2014 with Age of Extinction. It did drop down to $245. And then The Last Knight tanked it. More than $100 million less than even the fourth movie. Also by far the lowest opening of any of these. None of the earlier movies opened below $70 million. Two of them had opening weekends above $100 million. And this, like we said, was 44. Bumblebee was already in development at the time. That did make slightly less overall than The Last Knight. It made $127 million, but it had a budget about $100 million lower than The Last Knight. The budget on this movie was around $250 million.
Oh my God.
In spite of the fact that it did well at the box office, in fact, it made more money in China than the United States, which doesn't happen that often. In China, its opening weekend was $119 million and it made $228. It made $605 million worldwide, but because of crazy Hollywood math, even with that, Paramount lost $100 million on this movie.
Oh my God.
If you can make $605 million and still somehow lose $100 million, don't make that movie. Right. It's a bad idea. And thankfully, we should all be glad this happened. This was supposed to be the start of a radical increase in the number of Transformers movies.
Like
coming into this
something?
One, they got like a writer's room together. Because they were like, we want to be Marvel too. We want to have a Transformers cinematic universe Ugh. That has all these unrelated plots that come together sometime. When they were pitching this and Bumblebee, those were two of the 14 movies that were not in pre-production, but were at least outlined. Because The Last Knight tanked, that plan is gone. But there is some kind of Transformers movie that is supposed to come out in 2022. At one point, that was a Bumblebee sequel. At one point, that was a fresh spinoff. At one point, that was a sequel to The Last Knight. They don't know. So, made a lot of money, still ruined the franchise. Before we wrap up, there was a theatrically released Transformers cartoon in 1986. The Transformers, the movie, debuted August 8th of that year. It earned $1.7 million, finished in 14th its opening weekend. Aliens was number one that weekend. It never even hit the top 10. It earned a total of $5.8 million. It is sadly the final film credit for both Orson Welles and Scatman Crothers. Yikes. Oh, sorry, guys.
When we were talking about this briefly last week, I was like, wasn't Laurence Olivier in it? I knew it was someone fancy.
It was
yes.
It was Orson Welles.
I did not know it was also Scatman Crothers. Yikes.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
so horrible.
You got to be, when you're not feeling well, you got to be careful because something is, like isn't Robin Williams last, like, the third night at the museum?
That's fair.
John Ritter went out on Small Soldiers and,
What's his name? Yeah. Sean Connery better be careful. He better do something better than League of Extraordinary Gentlemen because I think that's his last credit.
Buddy, he's had decades to fix or, you know, almost two decades to fix that.
I know. I don't know what's going on. Has anybody even seen Sean lately while we're talking about it?
Just do it. Just
I'm
do
concerned.
Cameo.
I'm a little bit worried.
Him and Gene Hackman, the confusing, like, Gene Hackman, like, being retired and meaning it thing.
Right.
We're not used to this.
I know, right? Yeah, this movie, it's like it's ADD. This movie, ADD the movie. Like, there's just too much happening that doesn't make sense. There's too much happening that doesn't connect. There's too many people, too many storylines, too many plots that just kind of like, hey, this is, and then this, it just goes nowhere. And I'm, whew, that is.
Speaking of plots that go nowhere, the girl who plays Dora the Explorer is there. Wow. And I truly forgot that she was in the movie because she's right. absent for an hour.
Right.
And then she just shows up again.
I'm like, oh, hey, remember me? I'm supposed right. to be here doing stuff. And also a little bit uncomfortable with how long, like how she's framed a lot in.
Colin was like, am I supposed to want to bang this
right,
child?
Right. Like just some of the baby J-Lo, like.
It's so creepy. Yeah. And like what we've heard. Same from Michael Bay right. regarding Megan Fox and a bunch of other people. So he's gross.
I saw speculation that she was a late addition to the script because Stranger Things had hit and were like, we need an 11. Go put an 11 in this movie.
So. That's the thing. They're trying to appeal to like so many people in this film. And this film doesn't even know what it's supposed to be. I don't think like it doesn't know what genre. Like, is it action? Is it comedy? Is it spoof? Is it parody? Is it, you know, are we for kids? Are we not for kids? Are we for old men? That are we for like what is happening?
Jumping the gun to the is the MPA bullshit. Like this is really violent.
Right?
Just like constantly aggressively violent. At one point the news person goes, millions will die. And I'm like especially during a pandemic, that takes me right out of disaster movies.
Yeah.
And like there have been times where I've watched disaster movies. I watched the beginning of 2012, which is terrible. And despite it being terrible, once millions of people started dying, I was like, I had to turn it off. So I did not turn off Transformers the last night, but I really hated when they were breaking apart the Earth and just kind of like, I'm still supposed to care about Josh, whatever his last name is.
I don't know.
The Wikipedia says, the Wikipedia presented that as canon, that millions of people died in that moment. And it's like, what? Not to get back to, like, this has the same problem I have with Planet of the Apes. It's like, yeah, I don't want to consider, like, global annihilation and true suffering in my punchy robot movie. Right. Like, just...
Yes.
Exactly. We didn't need that at all.
To skip to the MPAA, it is rated PG-13 for violence and intense sequences of sci-fi action, language, and some innuendo. I don't know what some innuendo was. I didn't catch any innuendo, but maybe I was not looking at the screen at all.
Maybe that's their polite way of saying that they framed a 14-year-old girl like she was a supermodel.
Exactly. And like kept talking about this, like basically Megan, not Megan Fox, or as I saw online, Megan Faux was like, it's like she's undermined, like around every turn. Like, when are you going to get a man? It's like, oh, and you know, and also just like the way that she dressed, like when she first gets out of her car, goes to work or wherever the fuck she's going, she gets out and I'm like, I'm yelling, where the fuck is she going dressed like that? And she's like walking on 6-inch stilettos and cobblestone. Like, ma'am, yes. What the fuck?
What a confusing, weird, underdrawn character such that I fully forgot that she was part of the movie until you just mentioned her.
Maybe it was to talk about how long...
Wait, are we not talking about 11 anymore?
No, we're talking about the British...
The adult woman.
British Megan Fox.
Oh.
Maybe the innuendo is when they were talking about how long it's been since Mach had sex. Maybe that's some of the innuendo.
When he's got like the creepy metal leech on him and she's checking out his abs.
And her mom is having coffee clutches to talk about how she doesn't have a suitable man.
Right. Oh, and then when her and Mark go off in the room to look for something, there's like a bunch of banging around and the old ladies are like, oh, they're doing it. And they go to listen or something or whatever.
Oh my God.
In a 2.5-hour long movie.
So many scenes have been cut.
Peeling the curtain. We had to delay a little bit this week. So now it's been 4 days since I watched this movie. And every time one of you mentions something, I realize that my brain attacked that knowledge like the immune system attacking a virus and just has been working on deleting the stupid shit that happens in this movie for 4 days.
Right. This is why I'm glad when you delayed it and I was going to watch it that night and I was like, oh, great. Now I can wait to watch it. And I just watched it last night. So I just came in under the wire because I knew the same would have happened.
So that's an elegant pivot to the bingo card, which I am genuinely concerned about us not being able to accurately fill. For example, is a character on a plane? I think so. Like a military plane?
Don't they take some kind of military plane from Earth to...
Yeah. Mark is... That's how they get Mark to Anthony, right? Because there's a whole thing like, hey, there's not going to be snacks served on this plane. Which
you are right. Okay.
The fuck?
So
like,
good.
Chicago to England? I can't get some peanuts?
So on a plane, yes. I don't think if a robot alien is involved, it's a natural disaster.
No.
Did we see the president at any point? No. We saw like vague, you know, ICE stand-in was there to round up the robots, but we didn't see like leadership.
And I wasn't clear if Tony Hale, was he a computer hacker?
Oh.
No, he was like a physicist almost, because he was explaining what would happen if Cybertron got close to Earth.
Gotcha.
I think the only square is on a plane. Does that finally give anybody bingo?
No.
No.
We are going into this with no vetoes, and it is going to land on Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. That is what is about to happen.
Oh God, you shut your filthy mouth.
We've done two segments early. I don't know.
I have one more thing.
Pressing need to escape the subject.
I have one more thing I have to say about Transformers, and then hopefully I can put it in a box in the bottom of the ocean.
Oh no, I have several.
There are 8 different aspect ratios in this movie.
Why?
That is not an exaggeration. I had made it at least half an hour in before Colin pointed it out, and then it was all I could look at is the changing size and shape of the black bars basically they used a bunch of different cameras, used their native film format or whatever it is, their frame size, and never adjusted the way that a normal movie that uses different kinds of cameras would.
Oh my God. That's just lazy.
It's horrible. I don't think it's lazy. I think it was an artistic choice.
Ugh. Okay.
I think it was that Michael Bay was like, I have achieved the pinnacle of visual chaos. Oh, wait, there's more.
Oh, wait, there's
time
more
to think outside the box.
By not putting this bitch in a consistent box. Oh, yeah.
Because this is not like this scene has this aspect ratio. It's like shot to shot changes.
Yeah.
Sean and I have talked about, and I can't remember if all three of us talked about it on the podcast, how last year and maybe the year before, like, weird aspect ratio choices were a thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, even in Defy Bloods,
right,
he does that. So I had this moment, this fleeting thought of, did Michael Bay set a legitimate cinematic trend?
I think some people did. I think you hit the nail on the head when you're like, the ultimate, the epitome of visual chaos, because like, and when I've seen it done in other films, it's definitely for a reason. Like, usually, like, you know, okay, now we're going to another time period, or we're going to another place, and so like, this is why, or this is somebody else's story now, you know. So it's like, there's a reason to it. But this, I mean, and even like the editing is just kind of like the different scene jumps. Like, for the one that sticks out is there when Anthony Hopkins is speechifying and telling them the story of life and creation, and they're like walking through his castle and stuff, and like, they start off inside and he's telling the story, and then there's a weird cut and they are outside. I wasn't sure if that was just like supposed to be like a tale on how long he's telling this, is taking him to tell the story, or just poor editing.
I think poor editing.
The last thing I wrote down was just complete narrative failure. The degree to which this not only doesn't follow any normal structure or rules of this is how you tell a story well, but it ignores that altogether and doesn't even try to, you know, create some kind of momentum in how it moves from the beginning to the end is shocking. You know, I understand that everyone, particularly in the tens, wanted to be a giant never-ending franchise. Mm. That was foolish in pretty much every case but Marvel, but I get it. But you can do that without all of this needless overcomplication. What am I trying to say? Without overcomplicating it, yes, to this degree. All you need is good robots, bad robots, and a little bit of backstory.
Right.
And like, just escalate it one notch every time. That's all that we needed to do. Instead, we got 100 characters, and the minute that you like had a grip on it and were like, okay, this hanging out with the John Goodman robot and the Steve Buscemi robot isn't as bad as... you wouldn't see them again for an hour and 20 minutes,
right,
because the movie got confused.
Right, right.
I don't have things that I like. I only have things that I hated even more than the other things. How did this movie get worse when a steampunk Downton Abbey robot showed up? Like, he should have helped.
I laughed a couple times.
The only thing that actually gave me a laugh out loud moment, and I actually gave 5 points to the movie for it, is when Anthony is talking about the night table or whatever, and then you hear the soundtrack is getting deeper and like louder and whatnot, and then he looks up and he sees that it's, you know, the steampunk butler or whatever playing the organ, and that's, so someone in the movie is playing the soundtrack to the movie, and I thought that was a little bit hilarious.
I love it whenever they switch between diegetic and non-diegetic, and I can never remember which is which.
What is that?
One of them means that the music exists such that the characters can hear it.
Oh, okay.
And one of them means that we're just hearing it.
Gotcha. I like it. Yeah. Always gets me.
Me too.
He wasn't my least favorite character. My least favorite character was Mark Wahlberg's whiny, ranting assistant who showed up every now and then. That was terrible. Like, he was like just
totally repressed.
The black guy.
Angry about everything, but then like got the like, we did it. You know, like, those characters are never good. Those like reluctant sidekicks are never good anyway.
Oh,
and this guy
okay.
was particularly bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. I remember that guy. And I'm going to put him back in the memory hole because worthless character.
They were all pretty worthless fucking characters. I was kind of endeared by the little boys in the beginning for a little bit. But then again, that's like, why are they here?
And they also disappear for long stretches.
Right. And then, in the beginning, and we start off, you see, first of all, I'm like, is that Stanley Tucci? And then I'm like, is that John Turturro? Fucking Tony Hale? And then, again, it's another hour and a half before we see John Turturro again.
He's a callback character. He's in the earlier movies.
Okay. Thank you.
But I gotta say, most of the points I'm awarding are due to Stanley Tucci as Merlin, as drunk, confused Merlin. Love it.
Stanley
Why
Tucci.
Why Merlin? No, I'm done.
I'm still confused as to how, I don't know. Just Mark Wahlberg in general. Just exasperated Mark Wahlberg. All. I don't know why these Transformers are here. He's Mark is always Mark.
I think this might be the difference between people who appreciate these and don't. Nothing is less interesting to me than the way these robots are presented on screen. They do not appear to be existing in the world, in the actual world, for a second. Good CGI, bad CGI, these, if you replace them with cell drawings like Roger Rabbit, it would have an easier time believing they were in that world. There's something about them being fantasy creations that are so detailed with all the little metal parts that just makes it look like a blur that I don't care about. You know, maybe because I never was into Transformers as a kid, I never watched the show or cared about, but even, similar, not great CGI, when it's a dinosaur in Jurassic Park, or when it's, I'm thinking of the big fantasy monsters in the more recent Hellboy, which was actually kind of good visually, they find a way to make you believe that these are things in the world we live in, or a version of it. And at no point do the Transformers movies do that.
Right. I think for me, it's more it's less the visuals of them that make it hard to swallow. It's the fact that it's all of the auditory noise, all the chaos that goes on with that. Because it's the minute, it's the whole gag of oh my God, they're alien robots, isn't it kooky how they don't know how to behave? And immediately Mark shows up and everything's just fucking chaos. They're the guy's talking about how it's the Wild West, and it's just always just like they're it's just always something. Somebody's always something, and everything that they say is a catchphrase, or it's some sort of it's just always, always, always. And I think that I just wanted to climb the walls.
Yep.
Let's get the hell out of here. Let's rate Transformers The Last Knight. I came up with my score. I subtracted 3 points for when Anthony Hopkins says dude and bitchin' ride. I did add 1 point back when I realized that all the cop cars were bad robots. I was like, that's nice. Thank you for that nod.
To punish and enslave.
That left me with 5. I gave it a 5 out of 100.
A whopping Camille- 5. I gave it a 14. And that's merely because, and you know how I go about my ratings. It's because I will watch Elysium before I watch this again, but I will watch this before I watch Private Parts.
And I'm giving it 13 points, which I believe is one better than what I gave Divergent.
That's, I mean, so far, this is way more points than I thought it would earn. Nevertheless, I tanked it enough. Transformers The Last Knight is now our worst reviewed movie, ladies and gentlemen. The worst of the nearly 50 movies we have taken a look at. The final score of 10 and 2/3. Congratulations. That is 5 full points lower than the previous record holder, Rob Zombie's Halloween. It features the second lowest score ever given. My 5 is higher only than Robin's 4 for Rob Zombie's Halloween. So yeah, doesn't get any worse than Transformers The Last Knight.
Don't you tempt Tony.
I can't. I don't even have a Tony Goldwyn connection. Why are we watching this?
Well played, Vito. I had more fun watching this than I would have watching and talking about The Upside.
This is a totally different type of hate. Like, yeah. We didn't have to get into like the racial or
the ableism.
The disabled, just insensitivities.
Yes.
I could just hate
I'm
Michael.
Glad we didn't watch the episode.
I could just hate Michael Bay and all that he stands for. With a clean conscience.
Our second two-time director topic. I'm glad that, like, after maybe the second one, I was like, I'm never watching any of these again. These are the worst. It's like how I hate eating pickles, and so every few years I'll eat a pickle to make sure I still hate it. That's how this process went for me. Mm.
I also hate pickles. That's very rare for Pittsburghers.
Really?
I know.
But then again, I'm not a Pittsburgher.
It's done. We're behind it. Unless Tony is trying to teach us humility. I don't know. We'll get to the draw later. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Let's start with Camila. What's going on your screens?
Well, I watched two new movies. I watched The Old Guard, which amazing. Like, I mean, I could just sit here and just like talk about how fucking badass and awesome Charlize is, and even the Kiki, I think is her name. Like, everything. I loved it. I fucking loved that movie, and I will happily like argue with anybody who wants to talk shit on it. Like, even the stupid pop music that they use during a lot of the fight scenes and stuff. I'm like, you know what? That's fine. I can totally rock with this. This is okay. So yes, two enthusiastic thumbs up for The Old Guard. The other movie I watched has two enthusiastic thumbs down. Okay, so this will serve as my little PSA. I watched Orlando Bloom has a newish movie that has been released called Retaliation. Now, after I watched this movie, and there is no retaliation, spoilers, there's zero retaliation happens in this film. I went on a little digging online. So one, I found out the movie was actually made in 2017. For whatever reason, it's just now being released. But it was also released under a different name called Romans, which we're talking about the Book of Romans, which talks about a lot of forgiveness of your enemies. So had I known the original title of this film, I would have gone in wanting, like, thinking of something different. I would have gone in with something a little bit, like, not expecting, like, Orlando Bloom to go around killing a bunch of fuckers, which I did not get in this film. I would.
Right.
Orlando Bloom does a good job. He does well in this film as this tortured soul or whatever. And it was funny because I was really hard pressed to try to figure out another movie that he had been in other than Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
But, Pirates, he was also in that franchise. But this movie is just like, it's a difficult watch. Like, there is a really difficult scene where he abuses himself with either a stick or a dildo and some Vaseline. So
what?
Shit gets raw.
Dude, wear a hair shirt.
So if you like that kind of like moody, dark art house type situation, then this is the thing for you. But if you want to just see just somebody like fighting folks and like killing randos, this isn't the movie for you. Yeah. And on my journey, I am on, my next film up is Ex Machina, which I'm excited about.
Ooh, I love that movie.
Me too. Oscar, he's like, I'm about to fuck this dance floor up or whatever.
I was just gonna say, like, I kind of hate that my favorite part is the dancing scene, but my favorite part is the dancing scene.
Well, if you want to hear much more about The Old Guard, I would recommend that you listen to The Theronathon, featuring Robin Hitchcock and co-hosts Regina Conley and Bob Shields, their ongoing coverage of every Charlize Theron movie. And when you're done with that, switch over to their new podcast. Tell everyone about it, Robin.
Thanks so much for this pimp, Sean. After talking about it for literally 3 years, we have launched the Keanu Review, which is going to do for Keanu Reeves what we did for Charlize Theron. That is, watch as much... watch as much of his career as is available to us on the great wide internet, and we'll talk about it. So go check it out, the Keanu Review. Thank you.
It hit me the other day that you'll have like a twofer for that, like a crossover. You know, the Devil's Advocate
and Sweet November, which is the subject of our first and right now only episode.
Interesting.
As I was listening to your Sweet November episode, which is very good, I'm pumped about the Keanu Review. I was like, I've now listened to two full podcast episodes about a movie I have no intention of ever watching. Because it sounds bad.
It's terrible. Co-host Bob Shields likes it. Also, I'm going to just, because it's going to drive me crazy when I'm editing this episode, I'm sorry that my voice is hoarse. it's like a combination of they cut the grass here yesterday and I've been on too many Zoom meetings.
No.
There are so many Keanu Reeves movies.
Yeah, we're going to be doing that podcast longer than we're going to be doing this podcast, which we require conquering death to do.
Yeah. What other than Sweet November have you watched recently?
The only new to me movie that I watched all week is 1983's The Dresser, which no one wants to hear about.
What even is that?
It was nominated for Best Picture. It's Albert Finney and Tom Courtney. Albert Finney is like, oh, I can't believe you're making me talk about this. He's a Shakespearean actor who's an asshole. Tom Courtney is like his dresser and they talk. It is one of those early 80s and they talk movies.
Nice. I do enjoy Albert Finney, though. That was a man that just like held himself to a certain certain scale. And I really appreciate that. And I've always...
He's incredibly well cast in this movie. This is like the role he was born to play.
Nice.
I mean, that's a good transition into First Cow. It's entirely possible that you never have to know what First Cow is. But being a weird year, I guess there's also a chance that First Cow becomes one of those like, oh, actually, it's nominated for 5 Oscars. You know. Right, right. First Cow is a nice, pleasant movie about two kind of misfit guys that become friends in like Gold Rush era Oregon. They start stealing milk from the titular first cow in the territory to sell biscuits. And a rich guy owns the cow, and eventually he starts liking the biscuits, so he's asking them to make them more biscuits with the milk they're stealing from him. And if you've already fallen asleep, that's the problem. Like, it's beautiful to look at, and it's very, like, nice and pleasant, and is a nice story of friendship. It's never interesting.
What was that beekeeping documentary last year?
Oh, that got Honeyland.
Honeyland. That, it sounds like Honeyland.
Yeah.
I'm excited to watch it. I actually last night was like, I gotta watch First Cow so I could talk about it on the podcast. But it's one of those movies that I think you have to be in the right mood to watch. So, because it's getting, other than Sean, every critic I've seen loves it.
No, critics love it. I just got the feeling that if I got up to pee, the characters would just wait politely for me to return. It was that. And to make a joke for, I think, a fourth time now, in a fourth different medium, I'm sad that this is what it's about when it sounds like a movie about a cow that moved into the White House. That is the movie I was looking for. I guess a lot of people are seeing The Rental, the movie that Dave Franco directed about things going very, very wrong at an Airbnb.
Yeah, I want to see that.
It is, you know, north of average, mainly because the two women in the cast, Alison Brie, and I feel really bad, I forget her name because she was actually the best one, even with Alison Brie there, they bail him out. He's an okay director. The script isn't great. You know, it's a decent little thriller. Sheila Vand is her name. It's a decent little thriller. It doesn't end well. You know, watch it if you want. I think he could be a good director eventually. This isn't quite there, but I know it's playing at a lot of drive-ins if you want to knock yourself out. My drive-in movies this week were Christine from 1983.
No.
Yeah.
No. That's like watching Titanic on a boat.
Right?
at one point, they were in the movie at the drive-in. And I was like, please let the movie they're watching also be at a drive-in. I want a third level. That's fine. Like, that is so far from the best 80s John Carpenter movie. Like, it has its moments. It has its moments that don't work. Mary Beth was legitimately sad because at a certain point, she was just like, they're destroying a lot of really nice cars.
My dad used to always complain about that. He would get so upset. Like, he would fast forward through that part of Ferris Bueller.
I did that in Airplane. Airplane holds up. It's got plenty of problematic stuff, but it's just the jokes per minute are so high in Airplane that you can't help but crack up.
Sean, have you seen or heard about this new movie that's on Shudder where it's a horror film that takes place like all on a Zoom call or something?
I've heard about it. It's out today. It's called Host, I think.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it was filmed entirely over Zoom during quarantine. The director was never even in the same room as the cast. and the cast had to, you know, set some things up, you know, so that the door would slam behind them or whatever was going on. It's out on Shudder today. I'm going to be watching it. I haven't yet, but sounds really good. The Shudder movie that I watch is called Impetigore. Just a made-up word that means nothing. It's an Indonesian horror film. The director is really well thought of. It hasn't really had, like, a big breakthrough in this hemisphere yet. It's a great movie. It is so brutal. It's, like, one of those trigger warning everything where, like, you gotta be really hardcore. But if you can, it's great. It's to a young woman inherits a creepy old family house in the, like, a remote village in Java. And it's nice to see that that's universal. Did you inherit a creepy old house? That's not going to go well for you. But yeah, it's great. It's just only for, you know, the really hardcore horror folks, because it's a little hard to take. But I am excited to see Host. I'm also excited. I think either this weekend or next weekend, Shudder is dropping a 4-hour long documentary about the history of 80s horror. It's one of those where it's just like, we talked to literally everybody and kept everything in. So
sweet.
You two should do a Netflix watch party or a Shudder watch party, whatever that, however you do that.
Oh, that's not a one sitting. That's like, I will catch 40 minutes of this whenever I want to over the next 10 weeks.
I'm assuming it's all in one chunk. They don't separate it in episodes.
No,
that's bold.
This is a weird, like, this happens just in horror, because there's one of these about the Friday the 13th franchise and about the Nightmare franchise where it's just like 4+ hours long. It's more of like a document than it is like, this is clearly meant to be sat down and watched in one go. Anyway, let's draw a movie.
All right.
No vetoes are in play.
I know, normally I'm so excited when we get here, but like, you know, Tony, fool me once.
I'm not going to lie, right. I'm scared.
It's 11:56. I feel like that's the same number, which is scary because that's putting it close. I'm not kidding. It's another Transformers.
I
consider this my resignation from the show.
It's the immediate prior Transformers. Stop!
I did wonder why there were dinosaurs. I guess we're going to find out.
I saw the number come up and I was like, that feels like the last number. The last number was 11:58. Which is Transformers The Last Night. This is 11:56. It's in alphabetical order, so that's Transformers Age of Extinction from 2014.
Cry. I'm literally.
We're laughing, not crying, but I know why you're confused. That is so demoralizing. I'm like, do I have a loophole? Did I maybe enter the numbers wrong?
Did one of us get bingo?
Tony Hale's a hacker, right?
Let's remember all those times when we were like, does this count? Right. No. Like, let's go back to those. This is
Tony,
so
explain
improbable.
Explain yourself. This is.
I feel like fate is we can't get out of this one.
This is the way it is.
You know, this is the fire we agreed to play with when we conceived. You know, we gave ourselves more options. We've introduced more vetoes. What did I veto this year?
Transformers?
Is there another?
Well, the Faxy segment will be easy.
Get out of the way.
We've got to do it. We don't have an option. We don't have a veto. We have to have at least enough integrity to say.
Right. I mean, we can't just.
We've made a commitment.
This is what it is. You know how, you know, folks, you say like the devil is trying you, really like testing your patience and your belief and whatnot. In this case, I would like to put that on Mark Wahlberg, because it's like, Mark Wahlberg is the devil and he is playing with us right now because he wants desperately to take over as our patron saint, because this will be the third Mark Wahlberg movie that we have suffered through.
And the third Michael Bay movie.
Yes.
The third Michael Bay movie without getting to The Rock. Like, well, that's okay. Now, Tony heard. Tony's like, listen, you're getting other Transformers, and that's all. Well, we're a goddamn Transformers podcast now, everybody. That's the Transformers The Last Night, June 23rd, 2017. What was the number one song in America?
Despacito.
It was Despacito. It is our first repeat selection. Maybe that's fitting. We repeat a song as we essentially repeat a film. This is my extra challenge for next week. come in armed with five things that are different about these two movies. It'll be hard to do.
Right. Number one.